一人前だ頑張るよって応援なんだか若い娘が本能心の大混乱出したくない僕どうにもなりません
それでいいわけないだろ
さあ飛び出すぜ
さあ
乗り添う
咲く
べきなのさ
それ運命
I'm ready to startThis is Ninja Consultant Show 37, our triumphant return from Japan.
That we're recording for the second time now.
It's true. Don't use Audacity, the new beta version.
Yeah. Podcasters in the world, we're talking to you.
Especially if you have a Mac, because the crash recovery doesn't actually work the way it's supposed to. Instead, it destroys your project.
So the idea was that, sure, it's a beta version, it would be a little crashier than usual.But the crash recovery would take care of that, except it didn't work, and so we lost 2.5 hours worth of audio, which is why this has been delayed even longer.
It's true, because it was too depressing to record a 2-hour show again. This will probably be our longest show, so if your name is Paul and you're from... Wait, I mean, if your name is...
I know it is.
Your name is Paul, and you're from Honolulu, Hawaii, and you dislike it when we do any show that's longer than 20 minutes...I suggest you just
are out of luck.
Take some breaks.
However, part of this show does star your wife, so you might want to listen for it.
It's probably in the last 20 minutes, so
you can
just skip ahead to that section and then play it for Julia. So, we're going to do two shows about Hawaii. No, we're going to do two shows about Japan, our trip there.
We didn't actually go to Japan at all.
We went to Hawaii.
We went to Poughkeepsie, New York, where we've been hiding for the past 2 months.
We went to Hell, Michigan, so we get to get t-shirts about how hell froze over.
Oh, yeah. Super cold in the world right now.
So we're going to do two shows about Japan. One show wherein we talk about the actual places that we went and things that we did. And the other show will be, well, the first show is the practical show. And the second show will be the theoretical show. Where we talk about everything that we learned, the philosophy of Japanese life, the language...Whatever.
Yeah.
Crazy crap. Both shows will be super extra double long. So even though we've been away for a long time, you can now look forward to supremely long, boring episodes. Get used to it.
Enjoy it.
Noah's still mad.
Please try to bear with it. And if you hear things in the background, that's...
That's my brother and his friend playing Wii.
Playing the Wii?
They got a Wii. Anyway, here's what we did.
Yes, here's what we did.
The first thing that we did...
Was go to Michigan
for Christmas.
Right.
We learned nothing.Then we flew from Detroit to Japan into Narita in Tokyo. Oh, one thing people always ask, didn't it cost a fortune to stay in Japan for 20 days? No, not really, because we stayed with a friend of mine, who's kind of a friend of a friend. She was the exchange student in my high school who got to be good friends with a good friend of mine. And I hadn't really seen her since my good friend's wedding.But she had extended the offer, oh, you know, come to Japan anytime, you can stay with me. And I'm like, I'm taking you up on this offer as soon as my job is over.
And so, she was really super great. She was super nice to us.
Yeah, she was super nice. And it turned out we had a lot in common because not only did she really know a good friend of mine, but since she'd gone to my high school, most people haven't. And it's kind of a unique experience. So we had a lot in common.
Yeah.
And I wonder if she'll listen to this. Hello,
Maybe.
Mickey.
Hello, Mickey. Thank you for everything.
Thank you for letting us stay at your house. So the first thing that happened was Mickey's parents picked us up from the airport because they live relatively near the airport in Narita, and we figured that'd be easier than dragging our luggage all the way through Tokyo and out to Mickey's apartment.
Well, all right.
Go.
Tell me, well, when do you want me to tell the story about Invincible?
Oh, soon.
Okay,
but
okay, I'll wait for it.
But first of all, it turns out we should have spent more time in Narita than we actually did because Narita had things like cell phone rental places...currency exchange booths, but since we were being picked up, we didn't really spend the time in the airport that would have been convenient, and it took a long time, took a lot of great cost and last minute and all that stuff to find a prepay cell phone later.
Right.
But it was really nice of Mickey's parents to pick us up, and they drove us through a horrible rainstorm, and the first thing we noticed about Japan was the cars...have GPS in them, like all cars do, and the reason for this became apparent later because roads have no names.
Right.
Anyway, I was on the immediate lookout for a lot of vending machines and stuff, and there was a vending machine outside of each business, but Noah poo-pooed this and was like, this is not even as many vending machines as I pictured.
Well, I was expecting, people say that there are like totally vending machines everywhere.
There were.
And no, there really weren't.
I think so.
Well, I disagree. Especially, there were like...drink vending machines, relatively common.
Yeah, we never saw the legendary panty vending machine. We never saw any we very rarely saw unique vending machines.
There was one food vending machine that we saw at Comic Cat.
That we'll get to.
And yes, that we'll get to later, fine. But
you
also,
can do it now.
No, I, we'll, we'll do things as they happen. But it wasn't until much later that we saw a beer vending machine that also had the giant quart of sake.
Like a carton of sake.
Yeah, it was a giant carton of sake.
My gallon of sake.
Worse than box wine. It's like carton sake that you get in a vending machine, which you have to be pretty desperate, I would imagine.
Well, they have the whiskey and water in a vending machine, too. Does taste like whiskey in a can.
And the shochu.
Endless flavors of shochu.
But I expected a vending machine every 2 feet, and instead...
Every 20 feet.
So it was a bit of a disappointment.
I guess so. The night before we left, I saw a bunch of my old friends from high school at a big holiday party, and one of them was like, oh, let me tell you about Mickey's dad, and the story where when he'd gone to pick her up from the airport on a similar trip... The first thing he said was, I have something to tell you in English, because Mickey's dad speaks pretty decent English. And Mickey's like, Dad, people don't say that. Like, no, what are you talking about anyway? And he's like, I have something to tell you. Invincible is missing.
Invincible is missing.
Right. So we have to explain who Invincible
right.
is.
Right. So there was a storm. There was a hurricane, typhoon, onto Mickey's parents' property. These... High winds blew a rooster, who was a fighting rooster.
Like he was covered with scars.
He was covered with scars.
He had like big talons and stuff.
Possibly blew in from the Chinese mainland, possibly. But he was rough and tough, and Mickey's dad made a little house for him on the property.
Like a dog house.
They called him Invincible.
And he put a little sign above the doorway of the little dog house that said Invincible.
And whenever Mickey's dad would say Invincible, he would follow up with... Never defeated, never fallen.
So Invincible lived there for a month or so. And then another storm kind of came in, and the next thing they knew, Invincible was gone.
So we imagine that during that time, Invincible was really cleaning up the neighborhood.
Mm.
Like, Mickey's mom had a tea shop, and maybe there were some Yakuza gangsters who were moving in and making a tea shop next door to compete with hers, but it was evil. And so Invincible, like, kicked the thugs out and cleaned up the neighborhood.
Defended kids from bullies.
Yeah, from bullies. And then when his work was done, he went flying off into the hurricane.
Into the sunset.
To fight crime in another town.
Yeah.
Invincible.
Invincible.
Never defeated. Never fallen.
So, for the first day that we were there, we had one thing to do immediately before we could do anything else.
And that was talk politics with Mickey's dad.
Oh, yeah,
which
right.
Which is all he wanted to do.
Immediately in the car on the way there, Mickey's dad was like, we hadn't been out of the airport for 10 minutes. And he's like, so what do you think about President Bush? And I'm like, oh, God, I have to explain my country already.
Yeah, we were occasionally asked to justify our country. Mostly, well, I guess really only the one time. It was only really annoying one time when a crazy guy at Hachiko Station assaulted... Well, he didn't assault us so much as act crazy, but his English was very good.
It was in Shibuya.
Yeah, but it was at
the... It was at Hachiko entrance to the Shibuya
Station. Oh, to the Shibuya Station, yes.
Yeah, fortunately, we didn't have to explain our country's politics that often because most people didn't speak good enough English
and
to
Aaron
talk to us about it.
Wouldn't let me say that we were American.
I wanted to say we're Canadian, say we're Canadian. You don't see the Prime Minister of Canada causing problems and being really unpopular.
No, but...
Also, our accents are kind of a dead giveaway. So, Mickey's parents drove us to their house. Mickey's dad explained on the way. He was like, Japanese homes are like rabbit homes, implying that they're, like, small and cozy. But their house wasn't that small, but...
No, it was fine.
I thought that was just his wackiness, but later we met Mickey's parents' friends, and they were also like, Japanese homes are like rabbit homes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe it's a metaphor that Japanese people all know, but doesn't translate very well.
Well, and maybe they feel that way. I
think their homes are that small. But then I guess we live in New York, so...
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, is that New York homes are like...
Also like rabbit homes. Like rat
like
homes.
Like gopher homes.
Mice homes.
Mickey's dad, on the way to their house, was explaining to me in broken English. He said that he had two American planes at his house.
Mm. He said they were like 6 feet.
And they were 6 feet long. Mm-hmm. I thought that it must be an error in translation because that didn't make any sense that he would have 2 6-foot planes. But it turned out he did.
He totally did. They were like World War II model plane things.
Yeah, he was a pilot. And he grew up...
Oh, both Mickey's parents were retired. I don't know if that matters.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. So her mom ran a tea shop and her dad was a pilot and watched because he was a kid right after World War II. And so he would watch American fighter jets take off and land during the Reconstruction period. So he was inspired to be a pilot. He flew on JAL, didn't he? Mickey could fly all over the place in really swank airplanes.
Yeah, back and forth the U.S. Anyway, but we did get to see a lot of Mickey because her company was a really big company, and they give you off all the New Year's week, but actually like 9 days. So it's a really long break. And actually, most people in Japan get all like New Year's week off because New Year's is a much more important holiday in Japan than Christmas is in America.
Right.
And being not America, you get more vacation time in general. So the first thing we had to do was I'd insisted that Mickey pick up a Christmas cake for us because,
yeah,
as we know from watching tons of anime, everyone always gets Christmas cakes on Christmas. So Mickey had ordered one ahead of time. It was chocolate flavor, and we ate it with her family the next day. But as we started eating it, I told them, I'm like, you know, we don't do this in America. And Mickey's parents were really surprised.
Yeah.
Like, wow, really?
They seemed to think that
they thought it was an American custom.
But they thought that the Japanese only did it because they got it from the Americans.
Not really true.
Which, not at all.
Some American
But this was not, when you look at Japanese confectionery, it looks really good, and then you eat it, and it's like, wow, that was not very good at all.
I think you're crazy, but all right, go ahead.
No, you don't like the strawberry cakes.
Julie, yeah, well,
right?
That's just from Panya. It's possible that the Japanese bakeries in New York are just not very good.
Oh, no, that's not true at all. I mean, it might also be true that they're not very good. But Mickey's dad kept saying about how Japanese people don't like such sweet cakes.
Yeah, they don't. So, like, American desserts by comparison are extremely sweet.
Mm.
Mickey never really had, like, frosting or icing, as we call it, on a regular sort of American-style cake. Because in Japan, it's much lighter whipped sort of stuff.
And tastes kind of like nothing. But not this Christmas cake, which was excellent and came with little individually wrapped, packaged strawberries.
They came in their own box.
Yeah, each strawberry to its own box. And those boxes were in an even smaller box.
Anyway, the first task that we had to do while we were staying in Owami, where Mickey's parents lived, was we had to immediately go to Tokyo and get a catalog for Comiket.
I wasn't
really clear if they were selling Comiket catalogs at the convention, and also it's like you want to get it ahead of the convention so you can like know where to go once you get inside because it's so huge.
But
I was kind of misled. Like, they did totally actually sell the books at the con, but it was also problematic where I picked up the phone book size catalog, but so many of inside of the catalog, there are hundreds and hundreds of these little thumbnail images that are representative of what each group's offerings are. A lot of these images are pornographic because they sell a lot of porn at Comic-Con.
In fact, one might say practically all of them,
a lot of them,
are graphically.
Well, I was surprised the titles we were able to find that were not porn. Like,
well, some of them are maybe not porn for you.
They're
probably porn for someone.
The comedy ones?
Well, maybe not.
But then I found it extremely awkward. Like, I wasn't really going to sit around someone else's parents' house for several days and look through a phone book-sized catalog of porn. So I didn't really figure out how to read the catalog until the second day of the con.
And it turned out that we didn't even really need it, I think, for all the good it did us. Because we didn't really know what we were looking for.
Right. Well, when you're looking for something specific, like I knew for my friends, I would want to get some Death Note doujin.
Right.
So it's useful to be like, okay, all the Death Note stuff is on day 2, Hall East Hall, row L, or whatever, not row L.
Right.
Row M or something.
Yes, M.
L would be too appropriate. Or to know that all of the Boys Love FMA doujin was the first day. Like, you could kind of guess that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it
was a useful catalog. I just didn't figure out how to use
it. Well, it's
first.
Good. It's a good. I guess it's good that we got it because now we have it and can show it to people.
Right.
Just to be clear, you don't have to pay for admission into Comiket.
Right.
All you have to do is get this, and it's like what,
$25
or $30 or something.
You can get it on a CD-ROM as well, but I've heard those CD-ROMs don't do very well in English operating systems.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the very first thing, the very second day we're in Japan, we had to go to Akihabara. This required transferring across 3 train lines to get into Tokyo, to get into Akihabara. Something I hadn't really counted on was that there are so many train lines in Japan, and they're all independently owned. It's not like in New York, I can think of 3 or 4 train lines.
Independently, privately owned. I didn't know this. I thought that they were, like it is in New York,
like
they were
part
of the government.
Yeah, I assumed we would take the subway everywhere, but it turned out like JR trains do run around the city in a major area, but it's not just JR trains, it's other trains as well, to a really confusing extent. So it was interesting figuring out how to get to, and it was also difficult to explain to Mickey's parents, like, why we had to go to Akihabara on the first day.
Yeah.
Because, like, 2 days later would be Comic-Con. So we definitely had to go there immediately.
And why we needed to go is to get a cell phone, and
Since we were going to meet up with so many people, we really needed a cell phone. We went to Shibuya to try and find a cell phone because I looked on the SoftBank webpage, and it was like, you can rent them from this one store, and it turned out not really to be true.
But initially, we went to Akihabara.
Yeah.
And Aaron had led me to believe that there were going to be vending machines that with had cell phones in
I
them,
heard that somewhere.
And it didn't.
Maybe on the manga cast. It turned out to be true.
Maybe because
the cell phone vending machines were in the airport. And we did not see them.
Right. Except when we went back, I checked, and you could get cell phones at Narita, certainly, but they did not come in vending machines. So it was a dirty lie.
Well, I also, like, Mickey called around to some convenience stores, and they were like, yeah, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, well, we found one eventually. Where was it?
One in Fukuoka.
In Fukuoka, we found one lonely cell phone, disposable cell phone, sitting
in Lawson's.
Yeah, in a convenience store where no one would ever possibly have any use for it.
What?
You know?
Well, someone would, clearly, because the other one sold out.
I'm just saying, in
the
Tokyo,
point of this story is, it was pain in the butt, and now I own a Japanese cell phone.
The end.
And in order
not at all. It took a really long time to get that cell phone.
It did. It took, like, three more tries, but we're not really there yet. So, on, like, the, whatever, second or third day we got there, because we got there on the 26th, Comic-Con was the 30th, 29th, 30th, 31st.
Right.
Oh, we went for conveyor belt sushi at a place near her parents' house.
That's true. And we went to the lookout point.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Viewpoint. That's what they call it in Japan.
Yes, the viewpoint. Like the charm point.
Yeah.
Charm point. But when we first went to Akihabara, I was really, really jet lagged. Aaron was not. I was extremely unhappy. Just in general, Akihabara, I guess it's kind of like 42nd Street in New York. It goes on for a really long time.
What? How do you figure?
It was really bright.
Oh, because of the neon?
Lots of neon.
I thought you meant it's a major transportation hub, or it's crowded with tourists.
Well, it was
it's
crowded.
It's a theater district.
It was crowded.
There's nothing like Times Square.
That's not true. Times Square is full of neon.
I think Shinjuku...
It's full of people?
Both Shinjuku and Ikebukuro were much more like Times Square.
It's also full of little electronics.
Anyway, I was kind of surprised by Akihabara. Like, you know, you hear all these things about it. It's its nerd mecca and blah, blah, and all these doujin shops and whatever. And yeah, it is, but the streets are filled with normal people, too. Like, it's also the electronics districts. There are several major businesses. I mean, there are a lot of major businesses there. There are a lot of just regular office workers on the street.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest stores to buy cell phones in that you can imagine, none of which sold us a prepaid phone. But those stores were filled with totally normal people. They were not filled with a bunch of nerds. It was much less the nerd mecca that I had anticipated.
Yeah, although there were some nerds.
There were some real nerds.
Yeah.
And other gaijin nerds.
And we went into a couple of arcades, and there was...
The crazy toilets with the washlets.
Yes.
With heated seats.
Yes, there are crazy toilets in Japan.
But yes, I was immediately eating takoyaki using crazy toilets and everything. And trying to play Guitar Hero on a machine where I could not read the kanji or katakana.
Yeah, it actually took us longer to figure out how to play.
It took me 5 minutes to select a song.
Yeah, and...
And then I failed instantly.
Aaron failed within the first 15 seconds. The end.
The end. That was our Akihabara trip. Eventually, at first I couldn't really find the Comic-Con catalog. I couldn't remember what it looked like. But then we found one in K-Books, and each store that sells the Comic-Con catalog, you get that store's special item with the catalog. K-Books, it came with several posters of maids, which I was not very happy with.
Yep.
Also, we went to Tori no Ana, which is a very famous store that sells doujin and other otaku goods. We sort of went down each floor from the top of the building to see what was on each one. And when we got to the second floor, where it was like the maid cat cafe, so it was like a shrine maiden cat girl cafe.
Yeah.
And we just kind of peeked around the corner, and we were immediately assaulted
by a maid.
All of a
sudden, one shot out at us.
And she was like, welcome!
Arigato!
She was more like, yokuso.
Yeah.
Welcome. And we're like, no thanks. Assaulted by maid cats immediately.
It was terrifying.
Indeed. So we ran away from there. Also, according to Daryl Sret and Gerald, we wasted a trip completely because we didn't go to any maid cafes. Mickey and I kind of wanted to, but Noah was so uncomfortable that he did not want to go to any maid cafes at all.
I really don't dig it, although I said that I would go if we were going with the guy from Tokyo University, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think we ran out of time.
But that, well, yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't like Ninja Scroll anymore.
Really?
Because there's like a new breed of anime fans now. Who knows what the hell they watch?
Well, I think it's they don't like it for the same reason they don't like Fist of the North Star. It's too raw and powerful for them to handle. And it's
lovely,
unnecessarily...
Like
yeah, it's unnecessarily objectifying women.
Well, whatever. I mean, that's how women are, aren't they?
Full of gunpowder?
Yes.
And snakes?
Dude, that is so hot.
Full of snakes filled with gunpowder?
I'm so waiting for the day that I, like, pick up some chick at a bar and I'm like, hey, baby, what's up? And she's like, kaboom!
Oh, snap!
I'm like, I think I just had sex.
Was it good for you? Oh, that was amazing. Have a cigarette. Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentleman.
The podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at daveandjoel.com.
Whatever.
Driving anywhere there is really expensive. Like, taking the train, really expensive. When you get your special JR rail pass or whatever, you can take any train, any JR train, and it's relatively inexpensive. But for the locals, any kind of transportation, super expensive. To go back and forth to Tokyo each day on the train was like $30 or something. All right, not $30. Like, but over $5. And you have to pay when you get on and off the subway. So the subways there are much more expensive than New York City subways.
Oh, yeah.
It was, even just driving for, we drove for like 10 minutes away from Mickey's parents' house. Mickey had a car. And it was like $20 or $16. I'm like, Christ, like, are all the roads that expensive?
Well, and
they
we were following that one guy who had a $106 toll.
Yeah, like maybe he drove from Tokyo to Osaka?
Or something, which isn't even that far by American standards. Like, driving
coast to coast.
No,
it's probably like a 2 or 3 hour drive. It's probably like a 2 or 3 hour drive.
Yeah,
and it was like $106.
That's crazy.
As nuts. Comiket.
Oh, yeah. There's this thing called Comiket.
Right.
And we went to
it. And we totally went.
I was, at this point, a little under the weather.
I recovered completely from jet lag by the second day.
But I got sick, because I don't travel well. And as time wore on, I got sicker. And in fact, I even wore a face mask one day, because I was afraid that the Japanese would find me so putrid and offensive.
Oh yeah, I don't know if you remember that from the SARS scare, but when Japanese people are sick, they wear a little face mask thing. And I think it's supposed to be polite, like that way you won't sneeze and cough on other people and make them sick, but in reality it just really makes you realize how many people have colds all
and
the time.
It doesn't do anything to stop the spread of diseases, clearly.
Probably not.
Because if it did, there wouldn't be so many sick people.
Yeah.
So it's just totally a bizarre cultural thing.
Yeah.
And there's not really any point to it. It's also a bizarre cultural thing that you're not allowed to blow your nose in public.
Right, they think it's
very
disgusting.
Rude.
So you can hear people like sniffing the snot back in all the time.
Oh, man.
If you like listen.
Everyone is sick and everyone is sniffling.
Yeah.
And it's really quiet.
It's really gross.
Subway.
Yeah, because especially in Tokyo, people don't talk on the train ever, not even when it's not rush hour.
All you hear is
everyone sniffling in their snot. It's really gross.
Oh, it's gross.
Comiket. So the thing about Comiket, I didn't really expect that many people to be cosplaying inside of the convention area. I thought you were only allowed to cosplay in the special cosplay area. But in fact, the only place you could take photos was the special cosplay area, so you don't obstruct traffic in the rest of the super crowded halls, which really was convenient. I kind of wish at American cons, photography was limited to only one area, although then you won't get that, I don't know, there are ups and downs to it. But Comiket was really crowded to the point where certain areas were taped off with blue tape, and there were signs hang up that said, don't hang around in this area.
Yeah.
And if you stood in the blue tape area long enough, sure enough, an employee would come up and shoo you away.
Yeah, and they were really serious about that.
Saying you can't loiter there. And
I don't know why.
Seeing how the crowds moved, it would become apparent why certain areas were taped like that. But it was just really surprising. So the first day we showed up right when the con opened, and sure enough, there were crowds of people running everywhere, people with desperate looks in their eyes running you over to try and get, you know, that one book before it sells out or whatever.
Yeah, there was a huge line, a huge sea of people. And I was a head taller than everyone else, so I could see the hair of tens of thousands of people in front of me.
One might say 300,000 people. Huh? One might say 300,000 people.
Well, I couldn't see them all at once. They weren't all lined up, you know, stretching to the horizon. But I was taller than everyone, and that's a first, I think, in my life. It didn't feel the same way when we went to Korea.
You're what, 5'11"?
Yeah.
Yeah, Koreans are a little bit taller.
5'11". You know, I learned something today.
What's that?
An astronaut, to be an astronaut in the U.S.,
what?
You can only be 5'11". If
really?
If you're 6 feet, they will turn you down.
Ah.
So, good luck.
I heard
good
you have to have you have to have perfect vision, too.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah.
I have that, too.
I don't.
Awesome. Two counts in my favor.
I'm not going to space, then. As an astronaut, because I don't have perfect vision.
Then
I have to get laser surgery.
All right, never mind. Comic Cat.
The point of the story is, so, in the front of the Comic Cat catalog, they have a blank map. The point of it being, you can write out your own map. You can make your own map and then list on the side the artist tables you want to visit. Several people had, and you just take the map and not the whole catalog. But I took the whole catalog because I hadn't read it yet.
We didn't really know what we were looking for.
So we just kind of wandered around through one of the halls, which was a warehouse-sized room filled with about half Full Metal Alchemist doujin that was all boys love.
Yeah.
And just weird, crazy crap, like a whole, like, okay. So there's an artist table, and in a pod, there are maybe six different tables, or eight tables. There's like one pod devoted entirely to the premise, what if Ed and Al were Victorian butlers? So
no,
they were kind of...
not Victorian butlers, Victorian maids, weren't they?
No, they were butlers.
Weren't they Victorian cat maids?
Some of them...
That not a joke.
Might have happened.
One
things
where...
were kind of grouped by what show or manga things were based on, and then further broken down if it was like... a really popular show like FMA, then it would be broken down by character. So you'd get all of the Roy doujin in one area, all of the stuff that's just Ed and Winry in another area, all the stuff that's just Ed and Al in another area, three or four giant rows devoted to Roy and Ed.
So we now have, hanging on the wall of our apartment, there's a poster for a convention that is nothing but Roy and Ed.
Yeah, a girl in...
doujinshi.
A girl in a state alchemist costume handed me a flyer for an event where she was like, Ed and Roy only event. And that is what it says on the flyer.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's crazy. So only people cosplaying as Ed and Roy, only doujin relating to Ed and Roy. One of the best finds I got on that first day was a book, because there are many tables devoted to, for some reason, Roy being transmuted, transfixed. What? He was... doing an alchemy thing,
yeah,
and
he's transmuted into
a cat Roy. Cat Roy was at many, many tables.
And it's, you know, it's part of the show. That could, I guess, happen, potentially.
Yeah,
it's less out of place there than the Hikaru no Go doujinshi, where Hikaru and Toya are...
tiny fairies.
2-inch-tall fairies.
Don't know why.
Who are naked.
Who knows?
And had sex with each other.
It happens.
Yeah, like, Saya's like, okay, I can teach you the hand of God, but first, there's a few things we have to do. First, I have to turn you into
shrink you to the size of fairies.
Into a tiny fairy. Then, I have to turn Toya into a tiny fairy. You have to take off your clothes, your tiny clothes, have sex, and then I will teach you the hand of God.
One of the Death Note ones I had Light and L shrunk down to 2 or 3 inches high, and the point of this being that then L sees a piece of cake, which is larger than him, Light dives into it, and then L has to lick the cake off of Light. Makes sense.
Also another one where they're mummies.
That one's really good.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, so yes, day one had a lot of boys love stuff, and also original games, which we kind of missed out on, I didn't really know. We ran into Ed Chavez from the manga cast, like... I knew he was going to be there, but before I picked up the cell phone, there was no real way to get attention to him. Fortunately, I saw some guy, and he was like wearing these giant headphones, and I'm like, what kind of costume is that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's Ed Chavez. Ed was awesome. He showed us all around.
Super awesome.
Yeah, because he's pretty much bilingual, and so he showed us all around various Comic Cat halls, and he's like, here's where they keep the uniform doujinshi, here's where people are making custom computer games.
Right, but that wasn't this day.
Right, but we did run into him.
We did.
And we said hi to him.
We did run into him on the first day.
Right. Then we went to Shibuya to try and find a cell phone.
And we wasted a lot of time.
It's true.
And no thanks to SoftBank, wasn't it?
That is where we eventually got one.
Well, but that's also the place that kept putting us off for an hour at a time, where they were like...
They kept sending us away. Can you wait
please,
another
please
hour?
Come back one come back hour.
And then come back in 2 hours.
Yeah, and then we would, and they'd be like, okay, come back in 2 hours. And we were so sure that they were going to put us off,
they seemed
and then
like,
it was going to be
yeah,
closed.
It really seemed like they weren't going to give us a cell phone. And we were so, so tired at that point, because we got up really early to try and get to Comic Con on time, and it was a long commute from Mickey's parents' place, and then SoftBank kept putting us off, until finally their store was about to close. But they actually did give us a cell phone.
Finally.
Thank God.
At that point. Also, they have a really annoying ad campaign that features
Brad Pitt
and the other one.
Sort of this Cameron?
Cameron Diaz.
Oh, and also Boss Coffee Machines had Tommy Lee Jones on them, and he was
that was much better.
Yeah.
Boss.
Boss Coffee. Second day of Comic Con.
Wait, I have one more thing to say about the SoftBank cell phone store.
Go.
They had these little coffin hotels for cell phones.
Oh.
Where you show up.
What is it, a hotel? It was like a little stand.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
No, you could
like
open a little
house.
Door. Yeah, it's a little birdhouse looking thing. And you open the door,
uh-huh.
And you plug. Well, actually, you can't open the door.
Right.
You try. You have to put a coin in.
Right.
Right? And then you open it, and then you plug in your phone, and you close it, and you take the little key.
Yeah, it was like a coin locker for your cell phone.
Well,
but
right,
it charges
your cell phone.
And they have those in cell phone stores and also in supermarkets.
What a great idea.
So while you're shopping, you can charge your cell phone. Those have been there since 3 or 4 years ago when Allison visited.
That's possible, but...
And we still don't have them here.
I'd never heard of anything like that. That gets my stamp of approval.
All right.
It's day two.
Day two, we showed up a lot later. There was no real point in showing up early, and especially particularly after noon or 11:30 or so, things really calm down at Comic Con. You no longer have to squeeze through tiny passages. You can kind of just walk around and check stuff out.
All the good stuff is gone.
Yep. So, and a lot of artists close up by noon because
wow,
they're sold out of their stuff.
Yeah.
So a lot of tables will just be empty at that point. But if you don't really have a specific group you're looking for or a thing that you're going for, it doesn't really matter. Next thing you need to know about Comic Con is that not all groups go all 3 days, and if they do, they don't have a table in the same place because the themes change for each day. So if your group did both some Hikaru no Go Dojin and also some FMA Dojin, on the first day you might be in a certain table in East Hall, and on the second day you might be in a different table in West Hall because the first day had FMA stuff and the second day has Shonen Jump stuff.
Right.
So it's not like an American Con where if you get a table in Artist Alley, you're there for all 3 days.
Right.
So that's why I couldn't find the group that Zoe wanted me to get stuff from, because not only could I not read the list, I didn't know if they were going at all or which day they would be there. But halfway through the second day, I did figure out how to read the catalog. Then we went around. I spent almost all my money on Death Note Dojin because there are many hilarious titles, such as Happy Birthday L Book or one that was just called Jesus Japan.
There was a lot of quality Death Note stuff, and indeed, there's one, maybe we can scan in a picture in the notes, where Ryuk is dressed like Rudolph.
Yeah, the Christmas one.
Light is riding him.
Yeah, like a reindeer.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And another where...
It had a very glittery cover.
Where L is dressed in a Halloween costume, and even my stone heart... It's melted by adorable
dressed
Elle
like a cute,
dressed in
like a witch.
Like a witch or a whatever.
Super cute.
Goblin or something.
Yeah.
So the second day I was even sicker and kind of miserable.
Is that when we found the vending machine?
No, that was, I think, on the third day when we spent the most time with Ed.
Okay.
The second day was when we went to the concert.
We went to the cosplay area.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, so, okay. So there's a lot of cosplay inside the con at Comic-Con. And let me tell you, although you may have seen tons of good, excellent pictures of Japanese cosplayers, yes, there are many excellent Japanese cosplayers. And I would say fewer people were cosplaying at the con, percentage-wise, than at American Con, for sure. Like,
definitely.
If at an American Con, about 50 to 60% of people are in costume, Comic-Con, maybe that number is 30%.
Yeah,
it's a much lower,
lower
number. Maybe lower. But there are bad Japanese cosplayers. There are people whose costumes are wrinkled, or it looks like they got in the last minute, or it's kind of, like, craptastic. No one takes pictures of them. And I don't think they really hang out in the cosplay photo area, necessarily.
No,
and there were people in the cosplay photo area, like... men dressed as women characters who look kind of creepy, and nobody was really taking photos of them. So don't think those guys don't exist in Japan. They totally do.
They do, but they're not very common.
Right. They're less common.
And the good cosplayers are way better, than American cosplayers because they have the right attitude. Mm. We'll go into that more
in the theoretical show.
The theoretical show.
Anyway, the cosplay area was super crowded and kind of creepy, where people were just like, turn this way, please, turn this way, please,
yeah.
And they're kind of posing as their character.
Exactly as you may have seen it. Indeed, all of those shows like Cosplay Complex and Comic Party.
Genshiken.
Oh, yes.
But I would have to say that the difference between Genshiken and actually being at Comic-Con is because drawing crowd scenes in animation is really hard. I know this from first-hand experience. It's hard on the storyboard artist, it's hard on the animators, it's hard on everyone in the production.
That's true.
So when Genshiken draws Comic-Con, they don't draw it nearly as crowded as it actually is, or
nearly as
Comic
big
Party.
As what Tokyo Big Sight really is.
Yeah, because
it's freaking big.
It's freaking huge. But it's really hard to draw that kind of scale in animation, and it's extremely expensive to draw crowd scenes.
It's like each room is a giant warehouse.
Right. For perspective, so you picture Otakon's artist alley as the size of a giant warehouse. Maybe that one warehouse makes up half of one of Comic-Con's halls, and there are three halls.
No, not even half.
Less
than
half.
And there are four halls.
But it's like, Otakon artist alley filled the capacity, even the part where the art show is and the part where the big empty space is.
Yeah.
But it's filled.
Yeah, it's bigger than that.
So,
we're talking
at Otakon, there are 20,000 attendees. At Comic-Con, there are 20,000 artists and 300,000 attendees.
Yeah.
You don't really have to wait in line that long, though, because, again, there's no ticketing system. So even though it's a line to get in...
Well, a line to get in.
Then
there are some,
it moves really quick, and once you're in, you're in.
There are some circles that you'd have
to wait
in line for.
Oh, they have other individual lines. There's also an industry area. There are no events or panels or anything. And there's an industry area upstairs that's smaller than any of the artist halls, but it's mostly people promoting video games and mostly, like, dating sim-ish games or...
And was really skeevy.
Yes, it was really skeevy and tons of, like, professional people dressed as maids are handing you flyers every 5 feet and you can barely move.
And everyone is taking pictures of them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty weird.
Yeah, it was
so we
weird.
Didn't really spend a lot of time in the industry area, though managed to collect dozens and dozens of flyers.
But damn it, just one thing on the previous day, which was that we didn't go to the original games area because we thought that it was going to be original computer games, which we were not terribly interested in. But no, it was also original role-playing games.
Yeah, it was original trading cards.
Totally interested in. So I'm really upset. I now, like, I figured when we were talking about going and when we were actually there, it was like, well, maybe we won't have to come back. Maybe we can, you know, get the experience. And then, no, clearly we'll have to go back and do it again because we didn't know what we were doing the first time and we missed so much.
Yeah. We picked up a Call of Cthulhu module that's like an original thing, but it's in too complicated Japanese for any of our friends to actually read it.
But I did, and I talked to that guy. He knew a little English, and so, you know, we were able to talk about tabletop gaming, not... many of our conversations with any of the otaku over there that we encountered was like, what are your favorite shows? What are your favorite shows? And then we'd stand around awkwardly.
Listing shows.
And each of us would pause and take
like
five minutes to try and figure out exactly how to say what we wanted to say.
Yeah, or what's like the name of Ghost in the Shell in Japanese. It's really hard to remember.
I hate language. Language is ridiculous.
I know. But let me tell you, when you say Death Note, Japanese people just stare at you blankly. You have to say Death Noto.
Desu Noto.
Death Noto.
Desu.
Desu is too much like desu.
I'm telling you, this is the way that people pronounce
whatever.
It. Desu Noto.
It's spelled in English on the cover of the book.
Death Note.
Death Note.
Also, when we were getting the little Suica card, the swipe card for the subway.
Yeah, I was like, can I have
not
a...
not the subway, it's the train.
The
train. In New York, train and subway are synonymous.
Yeah.
In Japan, it was very off-putting. Because all of a sudden...
Subway is the subway and the trains are trains.
You want to take the train or the subway, which, that's ridiculous. No one here talks like that. The subway is the train. Don't be retarded. In Japan, different.
16 different trains.
In order to get in, you have to have, depending on the train line, you might need any one of a number of different swipe cards or slide cards.
We now have a large variety of Japanese transportation cards. Yeah, for different cities and stuff.
Different cities and different... lines, and it's all ridiculous.
But yeah, you can get the Suica card, which is kind of like you pay for a large amount, and then you just go through the money on that card.
Right.
I asked for it at this one booth. I was like, in Japanese, can I have a Suica card? And they're like, card? And I'm like, Suica card, card, cardo. And they're like,
cardo.
Apocalypse style things about ordering a caramel macchiato at Starbucks, even though it says caramel macchiato in English on the menu. It's about caramel macchiato desu.
Later, in fact, we would get an English menu, first receiving the Japanese menu, then it was obvious we couldn't
confused.
Really read it.
Yeah.
So the waitress gave us an English menu, and we pointed and pronounced everything as best we could, and got none of what we ordered.
It was similar.
Huh?
We got toast.
It was similar. Yes, it had rice in it. It was similar to what we ordered.
Yeah, toast.
Toast. You might have gotten toast.
When the world is reduced to a radioactive cinder floating in the frozen heart of space, and mankind has long since ceased to be, I take comfort in the fact that if the alien anthropologists excavate the remains of our shattered civilization, they will no doubt be able to learn everything they needed to know about human beings from a single, solitary movie.
Which movie?
Weekend at Bernie's 2. www.fearthegooberzilla.com, the greatest movie ever podcast.
So, the second day of Common Cat, one of the other goals that I had in people to meet was Keith from Teleport City is friends with a Japanese all-girl punk band, which
Aaron didn't believe.
I didn't believe at first. We didn't go to one of his parties, and he's like, oh, that's too bad, because my all-girl Japanese band friends were here. And I'm like, are you just making this up?
Just to rub our noses in the fact we didn't go?
Right. But no, it turned out they're real. So, I emailed this woman. I think the band's name is Audrey or something.
No, her name was Audrey.
I don't think that was her name.
We can ask Keith again.
Yeah,
she identified herself as Audrey. She said, hi, I'm Audrey, which leads me to believe...
maybe her band's name is also Audrey. The point of this story is, to hang out with her, she was like, oh, I kind of want to go to Comic-Con. I've never been. Should I meet you there? And I was like, well, yeah. And then she was like, oh, I can't go. I got caught up at the office. A friend of mine's band is playing in Shibuya. I'll put you on the guest list. And so we went to this friend's band's band thing. And it was really difficult to find.
Yeah.
And we got lost.
I think
that's about when I realized streets didn't have names. And I called her at one point, and I'm like, we're really lost. We're near this one thing. I can't find the place. She's like... well, it's near Tokyo Hands, and Tokyo Hands is like a department store. She's like, everyone knows where that is. So just ask anyone. Anyone will tell you where Tokyo Hands is. Fortunately, the previous day on our cell phone finding adventure, someone in a classy hotel had given us a map of Shibuya, which had Tokyo Hands on it.
Oh, yeah.
Ninja consultant travel tip.
Watch. If you don't speak the language, go to a classy hotel.
The classiest one you can find. And ask the concierge for a map.
The concierge will speak your language, likely.
Also,
if that language is English.
In all major Japanese train stations, there's usually an information desk, and they will give you an English map.
And they also speak English.
Their English is not as good, but it's pretty rudimentary.
You have a chance. There's like a table
yeah.
that you can roll on. And there is a chance that at restaurant or wherever you're going to run into someone
one
who took English in junior college and is really happy to see you because she doesn't get much of a chance to speak English, and then she'll talk to you the whole time.
We'll get to that
keep
point.
Talking
right.
to you.
Right.
All right, this happened to us.
So the band that we saw in Shibuya, when we finally found
it. Was awesome. We saw two bands.
When we finally found it, like the band that opened was called the St. Patrick's, and it was an Irish-themed
Japanese band.
Where they affected Irish accents over their Japanese accents, and they played a little jig.
Yeah, they danced the jig on stage.
It's pretty awesome.
And their Irish accents, their Irish-Japanese accent was hilarious.
Yes, the band that we'd actually gone to see, that Audrey's friend was in, was the Asakusa Hard Marching Band. Which, actually, on the flyers, they're going on a U.S. tour soon, and I will put the tour information on our show notes. I think they've translated to Asakusa Jinta. And a Jinta means something else, like a group of people, like a gang.
Mm.
It's kind of weird. Anyway, or like a... I think you can have a Jinta of people who are lobbying for a political... or
a, like a cabal, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
All right.
So they had a bunch of weird instruments, including a double guitar, a tuba thing, like a... not a recorder.
Like a
snake charming thing.
Did the girl have a saxophone?
Yeah, yeah. Or like a tenor sax.
So it was...
a soprano sax.
It was like a brass band kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they played... I don't know. It sounded like ska to me. But what their musical influences were listed on the thing.
Yeah, and it was like traditional Japanese music and marching music.
Marching music.
Weird, crazy stuff.
Surf music from the 60s. and it was really great. I expect that we're going to open and close this show with them, so you're going to hear a little bit of it.
We'll at least open it, but I might close it with the song that Keith sent us from a disco 70s movie about ninjas.
All right.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Shaka Ninja.
So
then I'm totally exhausted. The thing about seeing shows of bands in Japan is that with the price of admission, they'll usually give you a token for a drink. So between that and not having to tip anyone, I feel like you're saving money.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Then we proceeded on for day 3 of Comic-Con.
And I was really, really sick at this point.
No, I was sick. I was
dragging,
exhausted.
Dragging my way through Comic-Con, but we couldn't miss it.
Day 3 was still awesome. It was some sort of... Well, I guess the previous night is when we went with Ed to the men's club.
Oh, it was like a ramen men's club. Because we did that, and then it turned out...
He looked exhausted.
Yeah, Ed looked pretty tired, too. That was also the day, then, that we, Inoue, we met?
We met Inoue on the third day.
On the third day, okay. Never mind that, then.
But we did go to the ramen men's club.
We hung out with Ed Chavez, and he took us around a little bit. We wanted to go to a really good ramen place, so he took us to this, one of his old...
Haunts.
You say haunts, yes,
yeah.
Precisely.
From when he was in college.
Was it called the men's club?
Yeah, because it was a pun.
Pun on ramen. And it was indeed really good.
I think the ramen I had in Fukuoka was a lot better.
Oh, yeah.
But they're, like, totally known for that.
Oh, definitely.
So.
Well, the Fukuoka
Men's
ramen
was
easily the best. Best ramen I've ever had in my life.
Right. Oh, I guess listeners of this show who live in places like Minnesota might not be aware that ramen, when Naruto eats it, it's like these fresh noodles. It's
Naruto?
It's these fresh noodles. It's not like the kind that you get at the grocery store that costs like 20 cents. It's not top ramen. It has like a slice of pork that comes with it. And a good movie you want to watch about this is called Tanpopo. And it's a Japanese film that's pretty widely available. It's food porn.
It's a little food porn, yeah. After dinner, Ed was going to go to Mandarake. And I mentioned this, Mandarake being another manga store, doujinshi, and other stuff they sell as well.
Used otaku goods. There's a big one in Shibuya, but the main locations are in Nakano no Broadway.
We tried several times before we actually got to go to Mandarake, because sometimes it was closed for New Year's, and then this time we were like, no, we'll see you later, we have to go to this concert.
We totally could have gone with him.
It turned out
the concert was
really
near there.
It was a block away from Mandarake.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
Totally blew
it. We were totally lost. We were totally in the wrong part of town. And we thought we knew where we were going.
Totally didn't.
And then we ended up wandering right by Mandarake.
And we're like, oh.
And there it was.
Oh, well. But then we knew where Mandarake was for later.
Let's be clear, though. These, the flowchart that describes, like, the organizational structure of the Demons of Kamon is not based on powers.
Yeah. It's definitely not, because otherwise it would
number
be...
Number two would
otherwise
be
otherwise, it would be Last Boss and Stone Guy.
Yeah.
And everybody else would be like the janitors of the demon world. It's like, hey, snake chick, clean up this pile of puke.
It's like
outside class
snake
two.
Will get you. It's like, what? I'm made out of stone. And then she looks again at me and is like, sorry, I can regenerate any part of my body.
I can just push the poison out of my body. She's like, man, this sucks. Sorry, man. You know, we're all born with what we're given. They're like the mentally retarded people of the demons. The two demons are having their baby and the doctor's like, it's a girl! And they're like, oh my god, I hope she's normal. And it's like, her power is control over snakes.
Just throw her in a river!
Like the next room down, the kid's like flying around and shooting fire out of his eyeballs. And the parents are touching one hand to the glass, and they're like thinking about switching the baby, changing the name tags in the demon hospital.
Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentleman.
The podcast for people who don't like anime.
Or podcasts.
Find us online at daveandjoel.com.
Day 3. Now, Comic-Con doesn't just have porno doujin as Genshin would lead you to believe, particularly
no,
on
but
day
95% of it is.
I'd say less than 90%.
Okay, 90.
I would go
89%.
80%. 80. Because day 3, in the main hall, they had all the really famous porno artists. That's where all the men were. But in the other hall, they had, it was kind of craft day. So it was mostly girls who'd made their own kind of custom jewelry or other little, like, cosplay accessories.
Yeah.
Or strange little items, and it was also the hall where they had original doujinshi, which was a much smaller section than stuff based on things, which is my clever way of saying stuff based on things. copyright infringement,
yeah.
Dojin,
well,
or whatever?
Not really, not in Japan.
No, it's still illegal, but they just don't do anything about it.
Whatever.
So we spent a lot of time in the non-porn hall because the porn was really scary and there was a lot of it. The weird thing about Japan, and Mandarake was like this, but also in general, anywhere you buy comics sort of divided by gender. So particularly on day one of Comic Con, you get a hall full of girls who've made comics for other girls, and the other people shopping there are girls. On day three, you had boys shopping for comics. They might be by boys or some girl artist. Only boys shopping there. Hall full of men.
Yeah.
The girls are in the other hall. Right. It's very gender segregated. Mandarake was like that, where the front part of the store, just girls shopping there for comics for girls. Back of the store, only guys shopping for things meant for guys.
Shopping for the most twisted, weird, bizarre...
Prawn.
I don't know, probably.
I found some really interesting original comics, and I even bought like a little t-shirt with an adorable picture of beer on it. At the end of the day, we hung out with Ed again, and this time we met someone from Tokyo University Anime Club. Because
which we had planned on doing.
Right. So my brilliant idea a long time ago, I found an English webpage describing Tokyo University's Anime Club. And I had Mickey's help, and I wrote an email to them being like, we're American fans of anime from the US. Do you want to hang out? Someone finally wrote back. It was this guy named Inoue. And Inoue was like, yes, I would like to hang out. My English is not very good. It wasn't. My Japanese is worse than his English, really. So at the end of day three of Comic Cat, we met him, and then we went with him to, and with Ed, to Akihabara, where we hung out in Gamers, and walked through the entire store from the bottom floor to the top. As Inoue pointed out, here's a really popular title in Japan. We would say either, oh yes, that's popular in America too, or it's not popular in America.
Now, Ed went with us primarily, I think, because it turned out Inoue's English, well... At least at this point, we thought Inoue didn't really know much English at all.
Right.
Later, it turned out his English was pretty good, but
he was just really shy.
He was really on the spot and
yeah.
was really nervous about meeting us, and who knows what else. Maybe
because I'm a girl.
Maybe because Aaron's a girl.
It's hard to talk to me.
I don't know.
I understand. I'm bad at Japanese.
Yeah, I can't talk to girls either.
Yeah.
But Ed was our hero, because otherwise we would have been wandering around really awkwardly with this otaku from Tokyo University, and it would have been uncomfortable. But Ed was there, and he did the translation, and he also showed us a lot of the different manga that he's read that he likes a lot.
Yeah, he pointed out some great titles. It also became perhaps apparent at this point that DVDs in Japan, super expensive.
Super expensive!
Twice as expensive as US DVDs.
Easily.
Even the anime DVDs, much more expensive. But when it came to manga, half as expensive.
Super cheap.
Weird stuff. So I bought a lot of manga.
100 yen.
Tons and tons of books, but not many DVDs because they're too damn expensive.
Yeah.
By the end of the day, our backs were aching. I had backpacks filled with books.
Yeah.
And we'd been on our feet for hours and hours and hours.
I was very, very sick.
And Noah had a horrible cold. So the next day, I had planned nothing. We went to Mickey's apartment in Han Atsugi, which is about 45 minutes. It's like an hour and a half. Like an hour and a half outside of Tokyo on the Otaku Line. And Noah slept for the next 24 hours.
No, false.
What?
We went for New Year's.
Oh, Christ. It was also New Year's Eve. At which point, several Japanese people made it a point to tell us, oh, you're American. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year.
Right. Not really realizing that it's not really that big a deal in America at all. But for them, holiday of religious significance.
Right.
So we asked Mickey, we're like, can you take us to a shrine on New Year's Eve? So she's like, wow, I don't usually go to shrines on New Year's, because first of all, I'm not religious at all, and second, they're always really crowded. So she just looked up a local shrine in the area, and we just went to a very small kind of like local shrine where there was big... It was like a party going on, there were bonfires, they were selling red bean soup and grilled mochi. Red bean soup with mochi.
Super delicious.
And little charms and things, and you can take your fortune for the new year just like in anime. Like in Azumanga Daioh.
Yeah, and we got good fortunes.
Yeah.
Not everybody did.
Me and Mickey and Noah got the top three fortunes, according to Mickey's translation. Maybe she was just being nice, I don't know.
Who knows?
But if you don't get a very good fortune, what you do is you tie the slip of paper to a tree nearby.
We hope. Because we've heard conflicting stories, and Mickey herself didn't know, and asked a little old lady who was there, And the little old lady said, I don't know either.
Right, so you have someone else. They give you free sake at the shrine, but you have to throw money in if you want to pray. So I guess it evens out.
It's really funny because it was sweet sake and kind of like...
It had like chunks of rice in it.
Big chunks of rice. You know, I liked it okay. I was also very sick and I was glad very happy to be able to drink, you know, just
something
about anything.
Warm. Yeah.
I was like, this is kind of a strange sensation of...
It's kind of a weird experience.
Drinking kind of like baby food almost.
And Mickey was like,
this is disgusting. How can you people drink that?
She's like, here, you can have the rest of mine.
I don't know, dude. It's like, good culture, man. Don't look at me. You're supposed to clap and then throw money?
It depends on the shrine.
And then, well, I know, but at this point...
Some of them, it's like clap twice, bow twice, throw money, clap twice, bow again.
Right.
Or whatever.
We did that. Then,
Then Noah slept for the next 24 hours.
Yeah.
Also, the strange thing about this particular shrine was that... There's a big TV there, so you wouldn't miss the New Year's TV specials, because apparently what most people do in Japan is they sit at home and watch New Year's specials on TV, like the Red versus White special of bands, popular bands from the year compete, probably against SMAP, a really popular band.
Yeah, but it's Boys Against Girls.
Is it?
Yeah, it was. Boys Against Girls.
Maybe. So we watched some wacky Japanese TV, and then...
Oh man, let me tell you about this one. I still can't get over that.
The Almighty Goobrazilla and the Greatest Movie Ever podcast present How Not to Treat Your Fellow Podcasters. Remember, Daryl, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Paul. You did.
I lied. www.fearthegoobrazilla.com, the Greatest Movie Ever podcast. A podcast so awesome, we eat other podcasters.
Here's the thing. There was this show, right?
Right.
This was what we were watching...
On New Year's Eve.
On New Year's Eve.
Right when the...
right before...
Not when the ball drops, because
right,
that wouldn't happen for another 12 hours.
Well...
Or whatever, in New York.
Now, you think this guy was famous.
Yeah.
You think that this guy was...
He was like
someone.
Talento or a guest star. So they took this guy and they had him conduct the... Okay, first of all, Auld Lang Syne. In Sane Land, which I also like to call America, we sing... Auld Lang Syne only once a year on New Year's.
On New Year's.
You might remember from the film It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
Should old acquaintance be forgot something something.
Never brought to mind.
Everyone always sings that on New Year's Eve. In Japan, because it's opposite land or sometimes called crazy land, they never play it on New Year's Eve. Instead,
they
sometimes
only
they
play it when stores are about to close.
They always
to get
play.
You
no,
to leave.
No, not only. Always. They always play it at every store at closing time. And I heard that on the Josh
in
Japan.
The same recording.
I heard that on the Josh in Japan podcast. Actually, I think there were a couple different recordings because I started recognizing them after a while. I heard it on the Josh in Japan podcast, along with many other things about Japan, which I was able to verify while there. Josh in Japan was just like, it's so annoying. God, why do they do that? It drives me up a wall.
Yep.
And after hearing it played at a few different store closings, I started to have a Pavlovian type reaction where I wanted to exit the store. No one in Japan, when they're closing a store, they don't rush you out. In America, if a store is closing, someone will go around and be like, make your purchases and get out.
Get out. We are closing.
But Japan, more service-based society, and that's more for the theoretical show, they don't do that. Instead, they just play Auld Lang Syne over and over and over and over and over until you leave.
Until it drives you mad.
It's pretty effective, because I was nearly driven mad.
You cannot bear it.
So instead of playing that on New Year's Eve, instead, a lot of times they'll have Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, like the Ode to Joy or something.
Yeah.
So in this particular special that we were watching, someone who may or may not have been a celebrity or a guest star or a comedian was instructed to conduct the final notes of a choir singing Ode to Joy. When he got to the final note...
All right, wait.
Go ahead.
Wait. You have to understand. It was very cold out.
Right.
And this was taking place somewhere, like, in the woods outside of a shrine.
Right.
And there was a raised stage, a stage that was raised about 20 feet into the air. And on that stage, there was the conductor and the choir. And so he goes to conduct, and the clock is counting down... And it strikes midnight, and he raises his baton, and the opening notes sound, and the bottom drops out of the floor,
and
he falls
through
the
stage. No, he conducts the final note of the song just as the clock hit midnight.
Right.
And when he brings his hands down on the final note, then he falls through the floor of the stage.
Into
a trapdoor.
A giant pile of foam?
Yeah.
He's immediately grabbed and tied up onto the back of, like, a cherry picker on a pickup truck.
Yeah, like a big truck with a crane
with
thing.
A crane attachment.
Yeah.
And the crane, and he's freaking out, this guy.
He didn't know that was going to happen.
No. So they tie him to the thing, and they raise it all the way up in the air, and it's pretty high up. He's like 30 feet in the
air.
Oh,
yeah, and then they drive
around. Driving.
Yeah.
So they start driving, and he's screaming, I'm an eye. And they drive through the gates of the shrine.
Yeah.
And you have these large
wooden gate things.
Wooden gates.
Like an archway.
Two pillars and an arch.
Yeah.
And someone had replaced the wooden parts of the arch with foam.
It looked real until he hit it.
Right. It looked real, so he thought he was going to get clobbered, but instead he just bust through a couple of layers of foam.
Yeah.
And then the next one he hit was, like, on fire.
And then they spray him down with fire hose right afterwards.
And
not safe.
Yeah. And so this happened several times until they drove into this clearing, and there was a giant block of mochi, like a sandbox-sized block of mochi.
Maybe bigger.
Maybe.
Because he made that dot on the eye.
I know,
so
I know.
I'm saying that,
well,
the kanji was much, much.
It was
maybe
on the
you're
kanji.
Just familiar with giant sandboxes.
All right. Well, maybe I did.
It was the size of several vehicles.
It was a huge square of mochi, and written on it was Happy New Year in kanji.
Right.
Except one piece was missing.
From the top.
And so they lowered him from this crane, and he's still tied up. They lowered him into the mochi so that it would complete the kanji
right.
for Happy New Year.
So he kind of falls on there and dots the eye.
Then they interviewed him while he was still stuck in the mochi.
Yeah.
And mochi is sticky, and it was so cold, and you could see his nose. His little nose was so red, and his nose was running, and he was, you know, you could see his breath, and he was trying to catch his breath and explain that was probably the freakiest thing that's ever happened to him in his entire life. And the interviewer keeps asking him stuff, and, you know, there was no translation. We have no idea what exactly they were saying.
Yeah, Mickey kind of said.
And then all of a sudden the reporter is like, okay, see ya, and runs away.
So everyone clears the area. Like, the film crew and stuff, they back up, and everyone's running away. And they're telling the guy, hey, you need to get up and run too. And he was like, oh, I can't, I'm stuck in the mochi.
He's stuck in the mochi.
He's kind of pretending to be stuck.
And then there were huge explosions. All around him.
They set something big on fire.
And
in the background.
It was like a giant explosion, like an improvised explosive device had gone off, throwing shrapnel in all directions.
Right. Now, this, it's important to note here, it's not just that this was a New Year's special, that this was a spectacular event. All of Japanese television is crazy like
oh,
this.
Oh, yeah. No, this was not a weird program at all. In fact, this was, frankly, this was one of the
kind
more
of
normal
standard,
ones.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Japanese TV is super weird. Anime does not come on until 1 or 2 a.m. Unless it's Nana, then it's on at 11 p.m. or in the morning, like Naruto.
But Naruto?
For the most part, not a lot of anime.
It's like,
but that's theoretical.
Our Japanese pronunciation is poor.
Super bad.
And that doesn't...
Naruto.
Naruto. So that doesn't make much of a difference in America. People will correct this, but it's not a big deal. Everyone knows what we're talking about. However, this is not the case
in Japan.
So when Erin kept asking people about Studio Ghibli, and they looked at her cross-eyed, Ghibli. That was New Year's.
Right.
The next day, I slept.
The next day, Noah slept for 24 hours.
I slept for 24 hours.
Noah and
I did not get up.
And
I was
Noah.
So sick.
So Mickey and I, meanwhile, we went to Don Quixote Discount Amusement Shopping Center, which really was a discount amusement shopping center. Like, I was, you know, dubious about the amusement in the title. No, it was very amusing. So ridiculous. They had all this wild stuff, and it was like a cheap store. Apparently, it's very popular in Tokyo suburbs. And Patrick Macias mentioned it on his podcast, so I felt vindicated that Don Quixote is indeed that strange. It is hot pink on the outside and stacked with merchandise on the inside, painted bright colors, bright flashing lights, music playing in the parking garage, a bunch of nonsense.
I regret not going.
It was fun. I'd like to go to more Don Quixote in the future.
Hey kids, need to brush up on your social skills, job skills, life skills, but you don't want to go to some backwater tech college. Yeah, you don't have to. Thanks to Anime World Order, audio seminars jam-packed with the info you need to be a super successful human being. And they're free. That's right, free! Learn a foreign language, like Japanese.
Susumiya Haruhi no Yutsu.
Natsuhiko Kyogaku's
Takashi Miike.
Kyogaku Natsuhiko Kosetsu Hyaku Monogatari.
Itchy Balls.
Cultural Studies and Fromage.
The Japanese like their women like they like their cheese. Aged 7 years.
Women's Studies.
Maybe they're like goth tampons or made out of like velvet.
Ew.
Networking.
I guess you could say that knowing Daryl Surratt is an association that comes with strings attached.
Computer sciences.
I settled for a random guy with a neckbeard.
See, do you use Linux?
Huh?
I just wanted to know if you used Linux or not.
What's Linux?
You seem like the kind of person who...
No, I never heard of it.
Okay.
Ancient world history.
Mark Antony has a ninja.
Julius Caesar is the cigar-chomping American politician.
We are Anime World Order.
A mysterious trio of really strange people, if you can call them that, that are gifted with bizarre, not quite explicitly defined powers.
It's all blood and tits and ass and...
It's hurting my head!
That's the kind of show this is.
Anime World Order. blogspot.com 206-666-4AWO. Call now.
The day after that, we made sure to go to Tokyo Tower, because Tokyo Tower is seen in many anime as a scene where Godzilla attacks,
right,
or in the case of Magic Knight Ray Earth, they're kidnapped.
Lest we forget, because...
A lot of people don't know what we're talking about.
Right. Just back to New Year's.
Yep.
Year of the Boar.
Oh, yeah. So it's Year of the Boar this year on the Chinese calendar, which you might remember from fruits baskets or Chinese restaurants that have what year of your birth they're on the menu. So because it was Year of the Boar, New Year's is a big deal in Japan. There were little boars everywhere. Adorable cartoon boars on signs for department stores, in advertisements, on postcards you send people for New Year's postcards.
Popular cartoon characters wearing boar costumes. There was one that was like Winnie the Pooh wearing...
A boar costume.
A boar costume.
You could buy a festive boar hat at Don Quixote, which is hilarious.
Oh, why didn't you?
But it was not $15 funny.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Buy giant boar pajamas.
Amusement.
It was more like $30. It was like $35.
That's insane.
Yeah,
that's high-priced amusement.
It's funny, but not that funny. Well, there's other, like, food and stuff was cheap there. Also alcohol. And it was open 24 hours, too, which was different from most Tokyo stores, which close at, like, 6 p.m., because God forbid anyone stay up late, apparently. Or all night. two in-betweens. You go to bed early, or you're up all night.
Or you're stuck.
Because you missed the last train. So you're either awake all night or you get a hotel.
Right.
There's a lot of Lilo and Stitch merchandise. So they have, like, Stitch wearing a boar costume as
mostly
one grocery
Stitch.
Store. That
in
totally.
Fact, I don't know if I saw a stuffed Lilo anywhere.
No Lilos at all. Just Stitch.
Just Stitch.
There was, like, a Stitch wearing a boar costume in this one grocery store. I totally almost bought it. And I'm like, it's really good, but not $15 good.
Yeah.
Not kind of regret not buying it.
I don't know why Stitch is so popular. I think maybe it's because... Stitch looks like Doraemon. Oh, that's for the theory show. Okay,
theory.
Fine.
All right,
Tokyo Tower.
Tokyo Tower is like a really small Eiffel Tower. It's not very impressively tall at all. If you've been to a lot of tall buildings and stuff in New York or whatever, Tokyo Tower, not that impressive.
Even if you haven't been to very many tall buildings, just so semi-tall buildings, it was probably taller than Tokyo Tower.
Right. So the guidebooks all said it's pretty chintzy. The British guidebook said more tat than class.
Yeah.
Which was true. And it was pretty crowded with, like, families who had New Year's off or whatever, because this was like the day after, like, the first. And a lot of stuff was closed on the way there, but it was worth it for weird, crazy crap like the Tokyo Tower mascot.
Yeah,
which was in a little
mascots,
weird...
plural.
Yeah, there were, like, little phallic characters on the tickets and on the pamphlet, and also costumed
giant
at the event.
Pink cucumber-looking
like,
things.
They're supposed to be like the tower, but instead look like a phallus.
And why?
Who knows?
Why two of them?
There's only
one Tokyo Tower. Why were
they
twins?
They're twin brothers. On the roof of the lower floors, they had a weird, like, an old-fashioned style arcade sort of area. No, an old-fashioned amusement park that used to be, like, the kind on the top of all department stores in Tokyo. So they had weird things like those pandas that you can ride on because they kind of walk around. Giant Anpanman robot that you can ride around in.
Yep.
Or a strange, large Gundam robot that walks only in a circle that kids can ride
on. So you had to pay to get up halfway? And then pay again
if you want
to get up to the top.
We
didn't go up to the top.
Not really worth it. The next day, after that we ate at Jonathan's, which is where we recorded the final part of our Comiket episode. And Jonathan's is like Denny's, except for with a strange drink bar. At Jonathan's, I had Kaido-style corn soup. And I was like, oh, how novel, corn soup. And then I started to notice after that, corn soup was everywhere.
Freaking everywhere!
At tiny cafes with only three things on the menu, one of those things would be corn soup. In vending machines, they had cans of corn soup.
Every vending machine had corn soup.
Moss Burger, corn soup. Even at fast food restaurants, corn soup.
Don't
it's not a standard
want
soup. It's not
any
a standard
corn soup.
It's not a standard soup. In America, but I guess Japanese people really like it, because whenever we ask anyone about it, they'd be like, oh yeah, I like
corn
soup.
Corn soup is good.
Yeah, and we're like,
crazy.
What? I guess in America, standard soups are like chicken, vegetable. I guess if you're in a diner, French onion.
Yeah, mushroom, cream of barley.
All of those.
Tomato.
Much more popular.
Tomato
than,
soup.
All
than corn
more popular
soup.
Than corn soup. Japan's a weird place.
Bizarre.
Moving on. The next day, we were invited to Mickey's friend's parents' house in Yokohama for a dinner. And we discussed many interesting things with her friend's parents, which we will probably discuss in the theoretical episode. But on the way there, we stopped in Shin-Yokohama to do one of the things on my list, which was to visit the Ramen Museum.
Hooray!
Which was quite excellent. The top floor was disappointing about like how ramen noodles are made or whatever. But
I thought that that was the whole thing, that you go in and it's like this room, and it's like, this is how ramen is made. This is how different types of ramen exist in the
world.
Yeah,
or whatever.
And isn't ramen delicious? And I'm like, wow, we paid to get in here? This sucks.
But I knew because I'd read the guidebook. In the basement, was a huge reconstruction of an... In the basement was where you can buy ramen from different areas of Japan. It was also a reconstruction of 1960s Japan, like a city center. It was awesome. It was a reconstruction of 1960s Japan. Man, Japan has changed a lot since the 60s, if that was accurate.
Ramen Museum! So you go down the stairs, and it opens up into this giant panoramic view of a recreation of a 1960s Japanese city.
Like a town center.
Town, really. Where you're overlooking kind of like a neighborhood center, where there are a bunch of ramen shops, and then you can walk around the block, if you will. And they had it set up so that there were really realistic looking doors and windows and stuff, and sometimes you'd walk by and you could hear conversation from the other side.
Or like a band playing or something.
Or music.
But it wasn't really a door, so it's just a recording.
Right. But
really expensive.
Yes, it certainly seemed authentic.
You could get like six different types of ramen from different shops, and they would also rotate the flavors. So the guidebooks all said don't go there during lunchtime.
Yeah.
It's really crowded with people after the cheap ramen. They rotate what kinds of ramen are available, so you keep coming back. And they give you all kinds of discounts, like you park there for 2 hours, they give you a coupon for next time to come back for free. There's a lot of repeat business.
Yeah.
Mickey explained it several times. Japanese people really love ramen, which seemed definitely true, the way the museum was crowded. So this is sort of bad planning on our part that we went to a ramen museum immediately before a dinner party.
Yeah.
Wow,
oh,
we full.
Another friend of ours, Tetsuya.
Right. Yeah.
So later we would meet this guy, and he said that he had gone to the ramen museum. Like, his English is really good, but not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him, because I thought that he said that he went, often gone to the ramen museum, when in fact he'd only gone there once. I asked him, well, did you try all the flavors? And he looked at me aghast and said, Noah, I only have one stomach. Because it turns out when Naruto says, I want to try every type of ramen. That's something that could take a man a lifetime.
It's true.
And you could still not try all the different kinds.
Right. So then we went to the dinner party, which we'll talk about later. Moving on from there, the next day we left for Hokkaido. Now, most people fly. Now, I really wanted to go to Hokkaido. I'd kind of heard about it here and there. And then
Hokkaido.
Then I became sort of obsessed with it, and then Sapporo sounded like kind of a really interesting city. So I'm like, how can we get to Hokkaido? And I knew most people usually fly there. Hokkaido is the northernmost island in the Japanese kind of chain of islands. It's also a very large, empty space, and it was only really settled in the 1850s, so it's almost like an Old West type thing going on.
Well,
like the American West.
Settled by Japanese natives.
And
the Ainu lived there.
Right, the Ainu lived there. That's what I mean, like, how it's like the American West,
right,
where they drove out the native population and resettled it. The point of the story is, I budgeted about $250 to get to Hokkaido, but plane tickets around that time were really expensive, so we bought a JR East rail pass for a few days that would get us most of the way there. There's also a JR Hokkaido pass, but our JR Universal passes I wanted to use for traveling in a different week. I only bought a week-long Universal
passes.
JR pass.
Probably explain another Ninja Consultant travel tip. There are these passes. They're like VIP passes that you get by being not a native.
You can only buy them outside of Japan.
So then you have this thing that's kind of like a passport.
Yeah.
And you show it to the gate attendant, and they wave you through.
Right. It's like you're
so awesome.
It's like your VIP pass.
It's like you're the CEO of Japan, and they just wave you right through.
You can get on any train, even trains with like reserve seats.
Except for the
Nozomi.
Nozomi. Right.
The fastest style of bullet train you cannot ride with the pass.
But still.
You can still get really far. for a low price.
And the train map is, like, ridiculously complex.
Oh, yeah.
It
like
looks like the human nervous system, I think.
You can't actually get a train map for the entire JR system at once. It's, in fact, a giant book.
Because it would be too big and too complicated.
So I only had a booklet thing that was like a long pamphlet, like a magazine sort of, that described only the bullet train service. And there was a lot of it. So plane tickets to fly to Hokkaido were too expensive that time of year and that late. And I tried to buy plane tickets to fly to Hokkaido from Tokyo earlier, but because of weird, Japanese don't really fly domestically much, so you can only buy tickets 2 months ahead of time. I was like 3 months ahead of time. That was too long. Hadn't really planned the trip very firmly.
A high school trip is frequently the first time anyone has taken a plane anywhere.
Yeah.
It comes up a lot.
It comes up a lot.
Anime.
Then I wasn't really sure what dates we would be meeting all of these different people who we knew in Japan, and I had to plan it very carefully once we got there in order to see everyone who we wanted to see at the right time, the right place. So we ended up taking the bullet train all the way to Hokkaido, and it took a long time, but it was doable. It went pretty well, but I wasn't really sure how far we would get the first day, so we sort of headed for Aomori, one of the northernmost towns in Japan. We actually had a really pleasant time there, wherein I chose a sushi restaurant recommended based on the guidebook. The sushi restaurant no longer existed.
In a ridiculous way.
Right, where we walked up and down this street, and we're like, it's gotta be here, it's gotta be on this plot, I know I'm reading the map right.
I refused to believe that the thing had closed since the guidebook came out.
But it was like it was 5 years old.
The guidebook was only 5 years old.
Or 4 years.
And it's like,
and so it did mention in the guidebook, like, that the sushi market or the fish market in that town was closing to be reopened in a larger center in another location.
So we kept passing by this mall, and Aaron was like, this is where the sushi restaurant is supposed to be. I'm like, that couldn't possibly be true. But sure enough, after we'd gone back and forth a couple of times, there was a banner on the mall.
It said in big flashing lights, celebrating 5-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And that was where the new fish market was. It was also a community center, a junior college. It had free internet access.
That was super good.
It was a dollar store.
We wandered in there, and I was able to, for the first time in days, check my email, because I was really, you know, jonesing.
Anxious about its Dungeons & Dragons game.
Whatever.
Okay.
I was. So I wanted to check in on Dean.
Then we ate at a different sushi place that we saw nearby. Aomori is a big town for fishing. They have a big fish festival thing every year. A woman came up to us. A lot of places in Japan, I can read a menu in hiragana or katakana. It just takes a long time. But usually, by the time I'm done staring at the menu and deciding what we want, that's when they bring out the English menu. Or that's when they usually direct you to the English-speaking employee. In this case, it was a woman whose English was really good because she had studied it in the junior college.
Right there.
Yeah.
And I don't worry.
So that was probably the best sushi that we had on our trip, where she walked us through the plastic food outside to demonstrate the various menu options and asked, not for the first time and not for the last time, it's raw fish, is that okay?
Is that okay?
As if many Americans go to Japan and not knowing that sushi is raw fish and not really wanting to eat raw fish. I guess I could understand, like, when I was younger, I was, like, aghast at the idea of raw fish, but it really doesn't taste very fishy. I really like sushi a lot.
Yeah.
So, being New Yorkers, we're used to eating sushi, and also with chopsticks. So, people are impressed when you can use chopsticks in Japan.
But there were also descriptions of the, because we got a little guidebook thing somewhere.
She gave us maps.
Or whatever, okay.
The travel
it also had the list of events in Aomori over the course of the year, and it described these fish festivals, and it sounded to me like very Lovecraftian. They sort of...
The local fish god.
Yeah, they worship the fish god of the deep. Once a year, like, the fish god comes out and parades around town. Like, wow, Father Dagon, Mother Hydra. That's scary stuff. So I don't want to be there when they have the Fish God Festival, except I kind of do want to be there.
Right.
Yeah,
we stayed at a Washington hotel there. It was a big chain of hotels that's like a business hotel, where at first they thought we wanted different rooms, and then we ended up with one room with two beds. It's really annoying.
They gave us yukatas, though.
Yeah, it turned out every hotel gives you some kind of yukata. Like, instead of a robe, it's more like the lightweight robe, cotton robes that Japanese people wear at summer festivals, but, like, the hotel version thereof, which might be a variety of itchiness. Anyway, Washington Hotel's hardest beds of any hotel we stayed at. I don't really recommend them. Also,
yeah.
Kind of expensive.
Turns out, usually tatami mats are better.
Yeah.
We stayed on tatami mats in Mickey's house, and
I was
sad to leave them.
Yeah.
So cold.
Right.
So cold.
Yeah, the Japanese don't really believe in central heating. They heat by the room. The next day we left to go through the tunnel, which goes under the sea between Aomori and Hokkaido. It's a really long undersea tunnel, possibly the longest in the world. And it's also featured in the manga Dragon Head, because the kids on the school festival and the bullet train, in that instance, the tunnel collapses while they're underneath it, and it's bad news for them. But that didn't happen. It takes about an hour where you're completely in the tunnel. And they showed the train's progress on a little LED screen in the front of the car, so you can see, oh, we're about that far in the tunnel.
And allegedly, like, you can ask to be let out halfway through the tunnel and you take the tunnel tour.
No, you...
Oh, is that someplace?
You go from the entrance.
Oh, okay.
From a town at the entrance, and they'll take you on a tour of the tunnel, only in Japanese, only certain days of the week. The guidebook says all about it. We finally got to Hokkaido, and the next step was to go to Sapporo. Sapporo turns out to be in the northern middle part of Hokkaido and takes a really long time to get to because the Super Express bullet trains all end in Hakodate. And then a regular express bullet train takes you to Aomori. And then regular express trains take you through Hokkaido.
Washington, Washington, 6'8", weighs a fucking ton. Opponents beware, opponents beware. He's coming, he's coming, he's coming. Let me lay it on the line, he had two on the vine. I mean two sets of testicles, so divine. On a horse made of crystal, he patrolled the land with the mason ring and schnauzer in his perfect hands. Here comes George, in control. Women dug his snuff and his gallant stroll. Eight opponents' brains. And invented cocaine. He's coming, he's coming, he's coming.
That volcanic area.
Oh.
At the tip of...
I'd heard about that in the Josh in Japan show, too.
Kyushu.
Where...
Right? It was...
Yeah, yeah. It's Ozami-sama or something.
It's really this dark and horrible and depressing.
Right. It's like this volcanic mountain
people
where...
People go there to kill themselves. And it's said that...
Spirits of children wait there before going to the next world.
Yeah, that it's a crossing
over. Osori-sama. Or something like that. Ozori-sama. But anyway, it's only open in the summer, and we were there in the winter.
Aww.
But that was relatively near Aomori, where they said, there's not much to see there, but you should take a day trip
We should totally go back to Aomori and eat in the same place and say hi to that woman.
Yeah,
and
then go to the source.
Freak out.
I know. Well, she wasn't working at that. Anyway. So then we took the trains through Hokkaido. It was very scenic, and the houses were more Western style than Eastern. And eventually we reached Sapporo. Sapporo was helped to be laid out in the 1800s by Westerners. When I say Westerners, I mean Europeans and Americans and stuff. Anyone who's white.
Yeah.
Or, well, I guess. Westerners. Caucasians. And so Sapporo was laid out on a grid system. It doesn't mean every road has a name, but it does mean there are coordinates for each block. So you're on North 1, South.
Yes.
No, North 1, East 2 or something. And there are some roads with names. But my main purpose of going to Sapporo, I wanted to hit the Sapporo Brewery and Museum and eat Genghis Khan-style barbecue. And then we were going to stay in a traditional Japanese inn, a ryokan, in a place that turned out to be an hour outside of Sapporo, where I knew they would have outdoor hot springs, so I could ideally see snow and be in a hot spring at the same time. It wasn't a very snowy winter for Japan at all, so we really did have to go all the way out to the mountains to get my ideal hot spring experience, even though it was January. In Sapporo, so we walked around, I had this map, and it looked like Sapporo Factory Mall or whatever. I was like, I think that's where the museum is. It was an old brewery, but it turned out to be a mall.
You're missing perhaps the second most disappointing...
So in Marmalade Boy, they go to Sapporo, and they go to this big tower thing that looks over the city, and all the guidebooks were like, don't go to this tower unless it's night, otherwise it's kind of a crappy view, and it's a ripoff, and blah, blah. So I'm like, well, we'll just walk to the tower, and we'll see what it's about before we have to leave for the onsen. And so we walked to the clock tower instead of the TV tower. The clock tower was a small building that looked like it should be in Boston or something.
Yeah, well, but the clock tower had really been built up. Like it was.
Yeah, it was listed in all of the guidebooks, and it was listed on the maps that they give you at the tourist information center.
We envisioned like this gigantic.
Well, I may have misled you because I was thinking about the TV tower.
Right, I had
which has an observation floor.
Really,
I may have said that
clock tower.
It was not.
Well, whatever. When we got back, Mickey was like, oh yeah, that's one of the top three most disappointing tourist attractions in Japan.
Yeah. We thought she was just saying that, but if you look, there really are, like, the top...
There's an actual canonical
list.
We're
like,
top three
we asked Mickey,
most disappointing tourist attractions in Japan.
We're like, what are the other two? And she couldn't really remember. Only this was in the top three. And it turned out, there are the other two. I don't have them looked up now, but...
ていて小さなことほど計算できた1、2、3っていう世の中通して釣られてにゃしぶとくなくちゃいけません。負けるねえしさあなたです。勝ち組負け組世の仕組み僕どこにもなりませんって。それでいいわけないだろ。さあ飛び出すぜ、さあ乗るソング咲くべきなのさ。それ運命人生ロックならくもない。せいで